There are a few bills being discussed in front of the Judiciary Committee today, including House Bill 5043, which was actually proposed by Governor Ned Lamont. And I wanted to talk a little bit more about this. We do expect a crowd up in Hartford for many public hearings happening today, including this one. Joining us now is State Representative Steve Staffstrom from right here in the Bridgeport area. He serves as House Chair of the Judiciary Committee. Representative Staffstrom, thank you for always giving us the time. How are you?
Yeah, good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
Get to Hartford early to get a parking spot today is all I can say.
Yeah, I would imagine so. I would imagine so. So I appreciate you stopping by before all the chaos erupts in just a matter of hours. Talk to us about this House bill. It looks like it's really addressing this Lego size addition, like a Glock switch, if you will, to current, would you call them Glock firearms or pistols, or explain this a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So, I think most of your listeners probably know and frankly expect that machine guns are illegal in every state in the country, including here in Connecticut. But what's happening is we're seeing on our streets really automated weapons coming and being used in the commission of violent crime as a result of what we call DIY machine guns or these Lego size Glock switches. So the threat from these guns is really growing. Across the country, police have seized over 30,000 machine gun conversion devices, including these Lego size switches, in just the last 5 years. And we've seen recent arrests in Connecticut. And frankly, we've seen these switches being used in the commission of pretty heinous crime in Connecticut. Your listeners may recall sort of the really heartbreaking murder of a 20-year-old Hartford woman and her 4-year-old son a couple of years ago. We've seen gang shootings in Bridgeport where these Glock switches have been used. And so what we're trying to do is protect our neighbors and frankly, the police officers who they serve by passing legislation that would stop Glock, among other handgun manufacturers, from being able to sell these particular type of pistols that can be very easily converted into machine guns. So we're not taking anybody's guns away. We're not saying folks have to turn in the guns they currently have. We're not preventing law enforcement from going out and continuing to purchase Glocks. But what we're doing is following California's lead in trying to pressure the manufacturers to make slight modifications to the design of the guns they currently sell to prevent them from being able to be turned into these automatic machine gun type weapons.
Okay. So you kind of answered my first question, which is where people get these switches. So they're directly getting these from Glock manufacturers? They don't get it on the dark web or anything like that?
Well, what they're doing is they're buying the firearms legally from Glock.
Sure.
And then they can go on the internet and purchase these Lego size switches that very easily convert the firearm that you buy legally, lawfully in your gun store into these automated weapons. So it's two part. You're not buying the switch necessarily from your gun dealer, but you're buying the firearm that can very easily be converted from your local gun store.
So logically, that makes sense to crack down on buying the switches, but that sounds like a people problem, not like a Glock problem. I mean, I don't know. Is it easy for them to change their type of gun that's easily manipulated by this switch? Because if you've got people who are just going to decide to keep buying the switch, what does it matter if Glock, like unless Glock stops selling the gun altogether, I don't know how you stop the problem, I guess.
Well, the idea is you force Glock to slightly change the design of the particular gun so that they can no longer purchase a switch and use the switch as enough to modify the gun. So it's forcing Glock to redesign the firearm that it's selling in order to be able to sell into the Connecticut market. And like I said, if this was just Connecticut doing this on our own, Glock may say, okay, fine, we're just not going to sell that gun in the state anymore. But the thought is when you're talking markets like California, who's already passed this legislation, as well as New York State, Governor Hochul, who has proposed similar legislation in her budget this year, that when you've got an economy of scale of the size of New York, California, Connecticut, and other states that hopefully will follow our lead, Glock will take the step to modify the firearm so that these switches can no longer so easily and so readily convert what is a lawful pistol into an unlawful machine gun.
And to your most early point in this, Representative Safstrom, I can't imagine a logical person, even a law-abiding gun owner, to say, yeah, no, the average person should totally have a machine gun. I mean, I'm totally good with, you know, the right to bear arms and all of that. I have plenty of friends who are you know, gun owners. I'm okay with that. And I think logically, to get rid of this switch, which is making a weapon way more dangerous, way more impactful, and quite frankly, something that the average person may not even be able to manage properly, I think makes a lot of sense, especially if you're hearing that call from police. Again, all logical. I totally get it. My question is how easy is it to fix those guns? So, okay, you put the pressure on Glock. You've got California, let's say Connecticut, even New York. First of all, how likely is it that Glock is like, okay, so we'll change it? But also, how easy is it to manipulate guns? And then on top of it, people already own the guns. So unless you recall those guns in Connecticut, how do you effectively, I guess, make this work?
Yeah, I've been chair of the Judiciary Committee for 8 years now and in leadership for 12. And in each of those years, we have done fairly significant gun legislation. The idea is to change buying behavior and to push the manufacturers to make a safer product, right? No different than, you know, toy manufacturers or pharmaceutical manufacturers or any other type of product on the market. Sometimes it takes legislation to essentially force a company to invest in modifying its product to make it safer, make it harder to modify and to use for an illegal purpose. And so, you know, we banned bump stocks in Connecticut. We've passed ghost gun legislation. You know, we've done a number of things in order to try to cut down on the type of firearms that are available that can be used in, high capacity manners. You know, we banned high capacity magazines. You know, they're all pieces to a larger puzzle that really has shown that the manufacturers will modify their product when they're pushed to do it. We also passed legislation last year to provide a civil redress for victims of gun violence where the gun manufacturers act unreasonably. I think you and I talked about that legislation last year.
Yep.
And so, you know, it's not one individual piece of legislation that is going to sort of solve the problem, but it's the confluence of having tighter gun restrictions and pushing for safer products to be sold in Connecticut that frankly has shown results. I mean, in the last 10 years, 15 years in Connecticut, our violent crime rate has fallen in half in the state. We've cut our prison population in half, and we've strengthened our gun laws. So we have shown in Connecticut that if you are tough on guns and smart on crime, it leads to safer communities.
We are chatting with State Representative Steve Safstrom, who serves as House Chair of the Judiciary Committee. And we're talking about specifically House Bill 5043, which was put forward actually by Governor Lamont and has a lot of support from police, including Hartford, saying that they have seen this issue specifically in just a year's time. I believe the number, Representative Safstrom, was something like 51. They seized 51 of these Glock switch guns, didn't they? Or something? There was something that was used at that press conference when they first announced it.
That sounds right. Like I said, I mean, nationally, and this is sort of a national push by Every Town for Gun Safety, among other advocacy groups, like I said, looking to enact similar legislation in most states in order to really push for change by the industry. But the stat I've seen is in the last 5 years, police have seized over 30,000 of these across the country.
Yeah.
So 51 alone in Hartford is not out of the realm of possibility.
Okay. Here's a question, and maybe this sounds ridiculous, but you mentioned something earlier, Representative Safstrom, that got me thinking. So you mentioned that Connecticut has kind of kept up with the crime trends and will get ahead of it and will will look at something like bump stocks. Absolutely. Or will look at something like, you said ghost guns. That made me
ghost
think.
Guns, yeah.
So I understand, obviously, working with or kind of pressuring, rather, because it doesn't sound like we're working with them. We're more pressuring, if you will, to for Glock to change or to redesign, if you will, this gun, which is now easily manipulated because of this switch that people can buy third party really anywhere. But I was thinking about this because have we ever put pressure on the companies that manufacture 3D printers? Because we have seen, not just with ghost guns, but I remember distinctly there was a situation of people who were creating bombs in the basement of a home in Fairfield a couple of years back with 3D printers. And I'm wondering, at what point do we look outside of even the gun manufacturers? Because to your point, I think if you're putting the pressure on gun manufacturers, we should probably look at 3D printers and what people are creating in their own homes as weapons that are not traceable.
No, it's a good point. The printer is the device, obviously, to print something like the component or the switch or whatever. But what in order to print that, you obviously need to know how to do that. And what folks are doing is they can go on the internet, not to give a how-to guide here, but folks can go on the internet and they can find basically the design. And so you need that design as well as the printer in order to manufacture that ghost gun or that component or switch. And so what Attorney General Tong has done is he has sent letters to particularly some of the companies or organizations. Sometimes it's hard to find, kind of on the dark web as it may be, but to pressure internet service providers and others to remove basically the plans that would enable someone to know how to use that printer for this purpose.
Hmm. And again, I want to make sure it's super clear for people listening. You know, I watched the press conference on this. I mean, when you see survivors of Sandy Hook talking about the impact of these switches, you can't overlook that. And you can't say that we can't keep addressing ways in which we can tackle this issue without being totally open-minded to everything. I don't disagree with the idea of cracking down on even, you know, or making the manufacturers rethink their design if these switches are a problem. I guess my concern here, Representative Staffstrom, is really the big picture, which is to what end? So as you mentioned, Connecticut, it seems like every year it comes up with gun legislation and makes sense. I mean, to your credit, yes, we did talk about that legislation last year, thought it made sense as well. My point, though, is as you watch the crime rates, yes, Connecticut continues to be, you know, Connecticut compared to the rest of the nation, one of the safest states in the country. And there's a reason for that. But I worry that we don't look at the full picture. So are we going to kind of just keep chasing our tails because maybe it's a Glock switch this year that's the size of a Lego, but what's to say that something new isn't on the market already right now? We just don't know about it. It just hasn't been at the hands of a crime that's taken the life of a mother and a son in a drive-by shooting. I guess what I'm getting at is, are we really looking at the full picture? Are we really willing to also look at not just gun legislation that I think actually makes a lot of sense? I think, let's stop people from using these Glock switches in general. And if that means the manufacturer has to spend some money, so be it, to fix their design. But I think we also have to look at why crime in that regard has been happening and why people are getting more clever and creative in committing crimes. And that, I do think, comes down to pieces of legislation that have honestly turned people away from even wanting to be cops, have turned people away from even committing crimes that they used to do at 2 a.m. to now 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I think we have to look at also what our laws are on the books and if that's really stopping criminals from even wanting to commit the crimes that have become so egregious in recent years in Connecticut.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's chasing our tail. I think I look at it as sort of a constant battle against the evolution of technology, right? That every time we pass a law that says we're outlawing this or we're requiring that or whatever, the manufacturers are trying to find a way to get around it. And, you know, they are a step ahead of where we are legislatively, and we need to react to that. What I would submit, though, is Connecticut has reacted better than most states, and that bears itself out in our crime rate. I mean, look, I represent Bridgeport. Bridgeport had 2 murders last year. I mean, 2 too many. But if you told people Bridgeport was going to have 2 murders back in the 90s.
Oh, I would have laughed in your face. Yeah, absolutely.
You would have laughed
right
in my face. Right. And so So it's undeniable that there has been a dramatic, dramatic shift in our crime rates in Connecticut to where, like I said, we're one of the safest states in the country. And if you look at states, particularly down south, that have very lax gun legislation, they may have, quote unquote, tough on crime, you know, sentencings, but they have lax gun laws. Their crime rates are astronomically higher than ours. Florida, Texas, I mean, those kind of places, Georgia, their crime rates are way higher than we would ever imagine in Connecticut. And so, as Governor Lamont often says, and rightly so, you can't be tough on crime and soft on guns. And so what we have tried to do is be smart on crime, tough on guns, and I think it's paid off for us in Connecticut.
I do agree that you can't be soft on guns. I agree. I do think, though, a little bit, Representative Safstrom, that we, as you mentioned, I think we are very hyper-focused on guns. We have some of the toughest gun laws in the country. I don't think that's a bad thing. I mean, we are home to one of the worst school shootings in history. So I think it makes sense that we have some of the toughest gun laws. And I don't totally disagree with the gun laws, but I do think we are somewhat lax. We like to compare Connecticut to other states. And as a Connecticut born and raised native, I do think sometimes we don't want to compare Connecticut to Connecticut. And yes, you're right. Bridgeport today is different than Bridgeport even 10 years ago. But I also think the fact that we can't get police departments up to where we need to be. I mean, state police, we can't get enough troopers to do the job. And we have things that we had not seen before in crime happening today, because in some regard, I think we've put a huge onus on cracking down on police and how we handle crimes and if the punishments are where they should be. And we put a lot of focus on the guns, which is not a bad thing. But I don't know if we put as much focus on the other half of the problem, which is cracking down on criminals and empowering police to do the job effectively in Connecticut. I do think that has slipped a little bit in recent years.
Look, I mean, happy to go deeper into this, you know, on a number of things that the Judiciary Committee has and is working on. But with respect specifically to police recruitment, which it seems like is sort of where you're going with this, you know, every state in the country has struggled with police recruitment over the last 10 years. And we hit kind of rock bottom, I would say, kind of coming out of the pandemic in particular. We've done a better job with recruitment and retention over the last few years in particular. I think Commissioner Higgins at the state police level has done an amazing job in rebuilding the ranks of the state police. I think, yes, we continue to see too much aggressive driving on our roads, and we've been working on legislation on that. But also technology is advancing. I mean, one of the things that the Judiciary Committee is also struggling with this year is these FLAC cameras that seem to be prevalent all over the place. We had a hearing on that on Monday.
Yeah.
And there is this balance between sort of, you know, effective law enforcement tools and privacy and retention concerns, et cetera. And that's an issue the Judiciary Committee on a bipartisan basis, I think, was really struggling on. I mean, you saw some of the most conservative members of the Judiciary Committee really laying in pretty hard on the police chiefs on Monday about whether these FLAC cameras really should be everywhere or not. And if they are going to be, sort of how long is the data held and what can it be used for, and where do our constitutional rights sort of break? And I think those are the issues that the Judiciary Committee continues to struggle with, and we continue to strike the right balance on.
Representative Safstrom, I thank you so much for giving us the time here on WICC. Unfortunately, we have run out of time, but we'll certainly see what comes out of today's public hearing and what it's going to mean during this legislative session.